Mr. Harry Minard's real too. Now, we're talking about your training with A Company, 1st Battalion Northamptonshire Regiment in Trieste from December 1950 onwards. You got some of your weapons training with them that you hadn't had before, things like the Sten gun. Tell us about the Sten gun and what the training was and what you thought of the Sten gun before you went in action with it, perhaps.
Well, the Sten gun, I thought, was a good weapon in one way. It was small, it was easy to strip down, it was easy to use. And you could use, I believe, my memory may be right, you could put about 30 rounds in the magazine at a time. I'm not definite on that one. But the only thing wrong with the Sten gun, although I had one all through my army career, is they were the most dangerous weapon of the lot.
Now, why is that?
Because if you dropped it, it could go off.
The spring?
Yeah. If you dropped the Sten gun on the butt, the spring could sometimes go down and shoot up and go off if you dropped it.
Now, did you know about that when you were in Trieste? I mean, I'm sure you knew in Korea, but
we didn't know about that in Trieste.
They didn't tell you, because they knew about that.
They must have known about it, but we didn't know until one of my friends dropped one. And it just went off. Matter of fact, his name was, I think his name was Beavers.
And when did that happen?
It was when we this is going back when we were in Korea.
Yeah, we'll come to that then, yeah. But at the time, you didn't know.
No.
What did you think? I mean, some people have said it was a bit inaccurate. Well,
yes, it was inaccurate, but you could get a wide berth. I think more a weapon that frightened the opposition than done a lot of damage.
Any other new weapons? I mean, I don't know whether they had the Piat or the rocket launcher or any of that.
Well, yeah, we had a 3.5 rocket launcher, but that didn't come into... We were on the way to Korea.
Any other special training you had in Trieste that you remember?
No, I don't think so. Just general training.
So just nothing else special, route marching?
Trieste. Oh, well, we used to have lots of route marches, and then we used to have one route march. Yes, that's right. I remember we used to go to...
Tell us about a typical route march. What was it like?
We used to have to go lots of route marches. Now my memory's coming back. We used to go 5-10 miles all in a line, 3 abreast, marching, singing and marching.
What would you
and it
sing?
Was enjoyable.
What would you sing then? I mean,
All the old army songs as we went along.
The rude ones or the...
Oh, yeah, plenty of rude ones. The ruder the better. We used to sing, I think that one made the fun of it when you was marching. It took the boredom off of the marching.
Were they still stopping for 10 minutes in every
hour? I can't remember whether it was 10 minutes every hour, but we stopped every so often. I had a 10-minute break, but...
Would the officers come with you?
Not very often. They were sitting at their desks telling us what thinking of what to do next. The sergeants all come, and the corporals, they all come with us every time.
What did you think of your NCOs compared to, your training ones? I mean, what were they like when you actually got to the...
Well, I think they were different to a point that they weren't there to pressure, they were there to teach you. And they used to teach you how to deal with weapons, how to do different types of training, how to, in other words, look after yourself.
Were they more sympathetic than they'd been at Colchester?
I wouldn't say sympathetic, but it was training to a different type of way. In Colchester, you were taught to discipline. But when you went to Trieste, they were taking you more advanced type of things to learn.
And it sounds like you got on with them reasonably.
Oh, well, I got on with everybody.
Now, what about your officers? I mean, what did you think of the officers with the Northamptons?
Never see them. Not very often. Never see an officer very often. That I can remember. But I can't remember.
How did you feel about the officers?
I just saluted them as well they went by and that was it. I don't think you, because you didn't see them very often, you didn't take a lot of notice of them. It was more the Lance Corporal and the Corporal and the Sergeant that you were directly involved with that you knew more about.
So they were more important as
far
as your lives?
As far as I was concerned, they were more important than the officers. The only thing the officers were any good for was to salute.
Were you allowed out?
In Trieste we were allowed out. We used to go in the Union Jack Club and round we used to call it Birdship Walk, where the trees were over the top and all the birds We used to have two cinemas, one's British cinema, one side of the road, and the American cinema, the other side of the road. We always used to go in American cinema because there was all got popcorns and everything in there, more gals in there than there were in a British cinema.
Did you drink then?
Yes, sir.
So where would you go drinking?
Union Jack Club.
Well, were you a heavy?
No.
Just a couple of pints.
Yeah, you're general like I do now. Just a general few pints.
Was it bitter? Mostly people drank, or mild, or.
I can't remember what I know. We used to drink it cans, I think, in them days out there, but I wouldn't be sure.
Not bottles.
Well, it could be a bottle, but I said my memory can't remember. I know we used to drink, but my memory won't take me to what type of drink.
How did you get on with the Italians?
The young gals, very good. But you never used to see many of the older generation.
There was no trouble then?
No, I never noticed any trouble at all while I was there.
When you're in the villages and things in the mountains, you know, did the local civilians make you welcome?
Oh, yeah, we went on a 94-mile route march to Austria to a place called Basavitsa. And we had to march all the way. And then we lived at the top of the mountain, and the sun was shining, and snow on the ground. And that's where we done our training.
In Austria, then?
Well, we done 6 weeks in Austria. And we were pulled out of there to go to Korea. We were actually told about it when we was in Austria.
Now, tell me, when did this happen? When did you get the news that you were leaving? Or when did you leave them?
Dates are difficult.
Roughly.
We sailed for Korea in June.
I think it was August.
Was it August? Yeah, Keith had got more brain for dates than I.
Well, it doesn't matter, you know. So when did you join the North? I mean, when did you come back to England?
Then around about June...
1951, you came back.
Yeah, we came back because we got the mountains. We were told that we've got to go to Korea. So they sent us back to England,
to
Crowborough.
How did you feel when you heard you were...
Well, I don't think anybody felt anything, because at that time we didn't even know where Korea was. We didn't even know there was a war on.
And did you have any feelings about going to the Norfolks, 1st Battalion?
No, because we were going back to England to start with. We went to a place called Crowborough. And we had more training there.
Now, what were your impressions of your time? You got there about July.
Yeah, June, I think.
And, because you had leave, didn't you?
Yeah, you had 2 weeks leave.
Yeah. Around about June, July, Crowborough. Tell us what your first impressions were of the Norfolks.
Well, it was difficult because you didn't know nobody and everybody was bewildered to say, where's Korea? Everybody said, we've got to go out to Korea. Where's Korea? Nobody knew where it were. And then one bloke come and said, oh, I know about that. He said, because that's where the war is. There's a war between the North and the South. And then we realised where we were going. And being about 19 years old, it was a bit hard to take.
And what about the Norfolks? What did you think of them as compared? I mean, they weren't your... they are now, but they weren't then your regiment, were they?
Well,
what was your first impression of them?
First impression, I think everybody's, as I say, was so bewildered, they seemed to get on with everybody. Everybody seemed to get on with each other because we were all going to do something we didn't know nothing about.
And so which company were you put in?
C Company.
Did you go to 8 platoon straight away?
No, I went to 7 platoon, 9 platoon and 8 platoon.
So
this is going back a bit further when we get into Korea.
So when you started, you...
Yeah, I was in 9 platoon when I started.
And what were you, who was your officer in 9 platoon?
Beryl. Beryl.
Beryl?
Yeah.
How do you spell that? Do you know? It'll be in the book.
Beryl, yeah.
Beryl. And what was he like? He was a second lieutenant.
What
was he like? Can you tell us a bit
about
him?
Yeah, he was a nice chap. Although we didn't see much of him because we didn't meet him until we got on the boat to go out to Korea.
And who else was in 9 platoon? Any other characters?
Higgins, he was a company cook. Peter Bartram. He's now in Australia, as I say, I'll go visiting. Turl, Georgie Proudfoot, Corporal Freestone.
You were just a private still?
Yeah, I was private then, yeah. And I got made up to corporal as we were going out onto the boat.
And how did you settle in with 9 Platoon?
All right. I settled in with anybody.
And what kind of training were you doing at Crowborough? Do you remember anything in particular?
Yeah, we used to learn how to live off the land. We used to go out on into the field and cook our own food and learn in general cook food and general weapon training and going on patrols and learning about what you do if you were in a situation. You have to camouflage your tin hats.
Would you do that?
We had like a net and mesh on it, and you have to stick bits of grass in it and bits of anything to make yourself blend in with the ground that you were going to go through. Because we had to go to say you've got to go and find that position over there. And you start to crawl on the ground, but you have to look the same as the context of the ground.
Your helmet, what else? What about
your face? No, I can never remember having a blacker faces.
And what about on your uniform?
No, just the helmet. Yeah, I can't. What they do in the modern situation today, we never done a lot of that.
Now, so how about, what were the rules of movement to keep out of sight?
Well, you start to keep your head down, crawl, but at the same time, you used to be able to see what you were doing. Because it was no good crawling along the ground if you couldn't see what the object were or what you were going to do. And just things in general, you learn as you've done it.
What about this business of cooking food for yourself? Like you
mentioned, you had to learn to cook because they said there'll come times when you can't get food from anywhere, you'll have to learn to cook your own. So we used to light a fire, get some food and cook it, and then we always used to share it. We each had to have a go at cooking it and sharing it. Some liked it, some didn't.
And what about, would you have to stay out overnight
bivouac? Yeah, sometimes we had bivouacking overnight.
What was that like?
But that was different. That was difficult.
Why?
Because we weren't used to doing it in the dark to start with. But after a few times, you got used to it. It's like everything else. You do a thing more than once, you get used to it. And I can remember going out once and we got lost. But
tell us about that.
We just got lost going out on patrol, and in the morning we found a way back. Because we have to go out like a night patrol, learning to do things in the dark.
Anything, any other parts of your training?
No, I don't think so. That was just the general training before we had 2 more days leave to go on the boat, Empire Orwell.
What about the preparations for going abroad? Did you have a vaccination programme?
Yes.
How did that affect you?
Well, some people, I found we used to have to stand in rows. All of us in a row, and the MC used to come along and stick the needles in. Well, I don't know how many we had, but we had a lot. And it seemed the bigger the person, the larger the person seemed to pass out more than the smaller people. Because that's called Brett. I almost like to tell you, he was one of them passed out.
But you were all right. What about after effects? Because some people
after effects. You had a lot of stiff shoulders. You couldn't move it for a time. I think we must have had about 7 or 8 different jabs to go out to Korea.
And any, what about kitting out with any special uniform or something?
No, just had the normal stuff what we had when we was in training, normal kit.
What about embarkation leave?
We had a fortnight.
Tell us about that.
Well, when I went and told my mum and dad we were going to Korea, they were a bit upset. But we got used to it. I had a good 14 days with my family. Me and my dad went down a pub the night before and got drunk. We come back, and the day before that, he'd won a big fishing cup. So we celebrated. We've got a photo in there of us celebrating with this fishing cup. We had a few beers and got used to it. And then time would come, and a friend took me down to Bedford Station on a motorbike. And there I met Peter Bartram, Sid Hart. There's another one.
They're all from your 9?
Yeah, all from round the area, like from Bedford. Because I got on at Bedford Station.
Tell me about the trip out. Now, you went out, it took a month, according to the book.
A month to 6 weeks, somewhere
around.
And
you went out
on the Empire Orwell.
Tell us about the trip out on the Empire.
Well, the trip out was good, very enjoyable. I liked it because you could see the fish and that swimming inside of the ship. It was a lovely ship. We went out with hammocks. Yeah, we had the hammocks going out, and they were difficult to sleep with to start with, but you got used to it. And then halfway through, they come up to me, and there was Major Hashington and a few more run a concert party. So I helped them run the concert
party. Now tell me about that, and then why had they picked you to do that? What was this about?
Well, they didn't pick me in general, because my friend, David Jubb, he was learning to be a hypnotist, and he was one of them they wanted to do a turn, because he'd been hypnotising people all the way through his army career. And he was my best mate. Well, I helped run a concert party on the Emperor Orwell. The two acts I can remember is my friend Corporal Stollery. Stollery, yes.
What did he do?
He sung If I Were the Blackbird and whistled just like the birds, because he'd come from a village, and he was fantastic. And then following him, there was a couple more acts I can't remember. But then at the end of the evening, my friend David Jubb went on to do some hypnotism.
Now, he's, you say, a well-known hypnotist.
Not then, he was a...
But he is now. What was his act then, on the...
His act, when we got to the last show, I had to go onto the stage and introduce him. And I still remember today what he taught me to say. And the word he taught me to say was, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are about to witness a demonstration of hypnotical phenomena by that great wizard of hypnotism, David Jubb." And then he come on the stage. He had people on the stage. He laid them across two tables, and he took one away. Then another time, he got a mop, stuck it in a bucket of dirty water, give it to a friend, one of who he'd hypnotised, and said, "Who's your favourite film actress?" She said, "Betty Grable." He said, "Well, you're now kissing Betty Grable." He was kissing all over the film up. And he was doing, making people laugh and doing things in general.
And it wasn't faked up?
No, because he was learning and he was very good. And everybody that you talked to in the North, that went on the hall, want to tell you about that dance.
And sure. What about you? Did you have an act, or were you just...
I just introduced him. Yeah, because he was my mate.
And you said earlier you were promoted as you went on, you know.
Yeah, to
when were you promoted?
It was Lance Corporal in Trieste, that's right. And then Corporal when we were on the ship going out.
Now, what difference did it make being a Corporal?
7 and 6 a week.
What about the difference to the way you were with the lads?
No different. They knew me as I was. I couldn't change, however I tried. They always liked to come in my section because I knew I was a... We knew things got to be done properly, but I used to do them in a happy-go-lucky way, where some of them, when they got made up, they'd take me change. But on one of them, I couldn't change from that day to this.
So you didn't stand on your what dignity as corporal?
No. I was the same then as I were now.
Did they still call you Harry or
what? Oh, they used to call me Minnie.
Minnie?
Yeah, Corporal Minnie. Because when you was going out to Korea and living in Korea, it was different to being in barrack rooms.
We'll come to that, yeah. So, anything else about the voyage out? Anything you remember?
No, just general training. We used to have to do weapon training.
Tell us about the training. How did you do weapon training on the boat?
Well, practicing one-arm combat. We used to practice bayonet practice. Because I remember once I nearly got a sergeant out there, because he said, "Come at me, I'm going to come at me, you with a bayonet. What would you do?" And I pushed it aside, and as I put it aside, it stuck into the wood of the floor of the ship, and it nearly went over the top. And then we used to go to the back of the ship once a week. They used to put balloons out to sea, and we used to shoot them for training. So you can't remember everything, that's the trouble.
So, you know, you carried on training. Anything else about the trip out? Is that about it?
We stopped Aden, Quilombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Korea.
Did you get ashore at any of them?
Yeah, we got ashore on all of them.
And what were the visits? I mean, you were young lads. These are quite exciting places. What was it like?
Well, Papua, Egypt was the first one. Port Said, that was one of the filthiest, dirty places unimaginable. They would be sleeping with a camel. They were sleeping with everything. Very dirty in them days. Then we went to Colombo. That was a little bit better. Singapore was a lovely place. When we arrived in Singapore, it was a big carnival on because they were changing it from a town to a city. And me, Ginger Nutter, and Private Bartram sat on the square in Singapore, which as I've still got photos today of us three sitting, eating bananas in Singapore in 1951. And then we got to Hong Kong. That was another experience because I never experienced anything like that. We had about 2 days there, got back on the ship, and we ended up at Korea.
What was so special about Hong Kong then?
Cleaner. I think it was a bit cleaner, and it was a smaller place. But you see, as the years go by, you can't remember. Half of you should.
Now, tell us a bit more about Ginger Nutter. That's Keith Nutter, who Keith I know Nutter. You know I've met. But tell us, what was he like then, Keith Nutter? What was Peter Bartram like then? What were these pets? These were your, two of your best friends, weren't they?
You had several good friends, but Ginger was a good friend, and Private Bartram. Peter Bartram come from Bedford, so I knew Peter. And he was in my section for quite a while.
And what was he like then? Tell us a bit about him.
He was a good lad. We were all having a laugh and a joke. He didn't like army life so much as I did. But he took it and bore it because he got no choice.
And what did you like about him? What made him one of your best mates?
I think because he come from Bedford and we knew each other before and we just got on well together. Same with Ginger Nutter. Me and him met each other and we were instant friends. 50 years later, we're still good friends. He was a good bloke. He was the sort of bloke you'd go into battle with. Keith would be the... If you were going into battle with anybody, Keith would be one you wouldn't be.
Well, why was that? What
I don't know. He was a good bloke.
You mean he was steadier than most?
Yeah, well, yeah, and he was... I think because he come from a parachute regiment, I believe. And I think that gave him a bit extra training to us. And we got
was
on
well.
Was
he called Ginger? He was a redhead, wasn't he?
Yeah, we called Ginger. Everybody knew Ginger. Because he was a wireless operator for the company. With Major Holden.
Now, were you still in 9 Platoon, or had you been...
Yeah, no, I was in 9 Platoon all the way till we got to Korea. Peter Bartram, Higgins was the company cook. Me and Peter Bartram, as I said, we just met each other and become friends. But then he got transferred to the MT section. And he used to pop up and see me when he could.
Now, what happened when you got there? They got there, I think, on the last day of September.
Yeah, I can remember getting off the boat. The first person to get off the boat was the colonel. And they got some Korean women come and put flowers all round his neck and presented him with flowers. We thought that was a bit strange for a man being presented with flowers. Then we all got off the ship. Then we got on a train.
Do you remember there's supposed to have been an American army band?
Oh, there was a band there, yeah. I'd forgot about the band. There was an army band playing us off as we got off the ship. I suppose it was the usual American music, but that's something I can't remember now.
So where did you go then? Start of October, you started moving it up to where?
Up the line, as far as I can remember. We started to go up the line, or... Did we stop somewhere halfway? I can't remember.
Well, they seem to reckon you went to Britannia Camp, 30 miles north of Seal, but not many people can remember that.
No, I don't think many can remember that.
And and they went straight on up to relieve the Royal Ulster Rifles.
Yeah, on 355.
That's where you remember first. That's in the Koh Wang San area, isn't it?
I believe Peter Bart most likely tell you this, but I believe we went somewhere for a couple of weeks before that. Because Peter, when I was talking to Peter Bartram in Australia, he was saying that we got shelled there for the first time. And Higgins was the... I believe he said he thinks it was Higgins the cook, jumped into the sewer pot.
But it's what you remember that, Matt. So you don't remember that?
No, I don't remember. Because we talked about that when we were in Australia.
So you remember going to the hill 355
was the first one I could remember.
And Give us an idea of what that was, what the setup was in the Hill 355 area.
The setup was that we went to this hill and we had to dig in trenches around the top of the hill. And the first thing we had to do was start putting barbed wire around it.
Now, take this firstly, the trenches. What were the trenches like? Can you describe?
Well, you dug your own.
Tell me what they were like.
Well, you dug a trench just big enough for two to stand in.
So how deep? How deep?
Well, it's difficult because if you're a small bloke, you didn't dig it to deep, but if you're the big bloke. Just long enough so your shoulders were over the top, so you could leave your weapons on the top with a couple of sandbags to see if then when the enemy are coming. Cause we were on the side of 355, a little valley coming down, because that's where they expected to come up. And we had to barbed wire that every day.
And so the you just had slit trenches that weren't connected together?
No.
And no bunkers then?
No, not up there. They were all separate, as I can remember. A trench here and a trench there.
So tell me about the wiring in.
Well, you
how did you do the barbed wire? How did you put
it
out?
You used to have steel posts. You used to have to stick a steel post about every 10 yards. Then you used to roll a wire and twist it round. 3 or 4 strands. Then we used to have to come down at a vertical, horizontal angle so they couldn't climb up it. And if they climbed up it, you could catch them when they was coming up it. A lot of barbed wire went on. We used to have a little Korean porters to come and help us carry it.
And this first period in the line, you C Company, you were still with 9 Platoon, were you?
Yeah, still with 9 Platoon.
And the C Company was apparently behind the KSLI.
That's right, yeah, more or less directly behind King's Own Scottish
Borders. So not exactly in the front line, although the lines...
No, the front line were the King's Own Scottish Borders and the Cosbys and the Australian Regiment, I believe. We were on a big hill just behind them. Air A Company was right up at the front.
And your hill was, it was Hill 355?
Yeah, more or less on the left of 355 we were on.
And so tell me what life was like, you know.
Well, we wasn't there long before, I think we got there early November, and we hadn't been there many days before the Colonel, I can remember Colonel Olibar coming along with Major Hall, and he said there's trouble brewing. That was about the 3rd, the 4th of November.
So you've been there about 3 weeks then?
Yeah. I can't remember how long we were there. We weren't there long. And then I can remember the Colonel coming down about 3:15 in the afternoon with Major Holt and saying, right, there's a big offensive happening. Stand to, all of you, all night. And at 3:15 that afternoon, the King's Own Scottish Borders in front of us started getting shelled. And they were being shelled unmercifully. The KSLI was on the left, and I believe the Australian Regiment, my memory, not good, but
what
the
happened?
Regiment.
What happened?
Well, all of a sudden, 3:15, they started getting shelled unmercifully. The King's Own Scottish Borders and the KSLI. And I can remember saying to one of my mates, Bywaters, who was in the trench with me, God, look at that lot over there, just like somebody throwing, it was just like somebody throwing stones on a pond. And I said, I hope we don't get none over here. Within